This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to welcome in Phil DeLeon, who is the chief information officer here in the Diocese of Sacramento, pretty much runs at nothing moves without Phil. Phil, welcome.
Hi, thanks. Thanks, Bob. Well, I don't know if I would exactly put it like that, but I appreciate the background that.
So you're the chief information officer. You're going to give us some information, I hope, today.
Yeah, I think I'll probably give you a little bit. Sure, of course.
Yeah, describe your job. Tell us, you know, people think of the pastoral center, and of course they think of the bishop, and they think of, you know, Catholic Charities and youth and young adult ministry and all these other things. You have your fingers in all the ministries.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, so pretty much there are two factions here at the diocese that my unit, the Information Technology Unit, oversees. And that is the first part, of course, the Pastoral Center, which is the administrative offices for the Diocese of Sacramento. And then there's also another segment that we also take care of, a rather large segment, very important segment of the diocese, and that's the CFCS, or the Catholic Cemeteries Funeral Center. So take care of their IT needs as well. And that's kind of the sum of it, but it's really changed radically in the last year with COVID-19 and whatnot.
How so?
You know, so the biggest part, I would say, is, most everybody used to work out of the office, and then, you know, we oversaw the computers, the printers, any of the technology, the internet, the email going out. But, as a result of COVID-19, a lot of folks now are starting to work remotely from home out of necessity. And so that was kind of an area where, you know, we really hadn't had a lot of deep experience in terms of having to have a lot of people work from home with great amounts. And then the other side of the coin is, of course, working from home, they've also had to conduct meetings, as many people have, video conferencing. And that has taken on a life of its own. That has grown tremendously in terms of everyone having to meet not only by telephone but also by video conference and, having seminars, sessions, et cetera, whether it be our employees, our staff, or even our outreach programs, which go out to the individual parishes. And that has just grown immensely in the last several months, really.
So is Zoom the only game in town for that kind of thing, or are there all kinds of different options?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, there are several different companies that have gotten on that bandwagon, Zoom being one. We use a company called LifeSize, but there are really several companies. GoToMeeting is another. You know, if you talk to various people, they'll say that, oh, I use this system or I use that system. And there are a lot of similarities or a lot of small differences as well. But they all basically get the same job done, some a little bit more friendly than others, some that have some added features. Certainly, you know, Zoom is one of the big ones that everybody always talks about, I think one of the things that's promoted them is they have the basic setup, which is free for a lot of people. So a lot of people will jump on Zoom because that's kind of a commonplace.
I can't tell you how many times, Phil, in the last year I've heard people say, I've never heard of Zoom. Where'd they come from? I think I was one of the people saying that.
Right. Well, that's kind of funny. You know, whenever I tell people here in the diocese that, you know, we use LifeSize, and there's a good reason we use LifeSize over Zoom, it's kind of interesting because they'll say, well, what's LifeSize? Mm-hmm. What company is that? I've never heard of them. that's really changed radically. You know, there are other companies that were in the game as well that did video conferencing much earlier, like Cisco and so many others that integrated their own camera systems and whatnot. But what's really nice now is that many of these new systems, you don't have to buy into this special system. You don't have to buy their special cameras and whatnot. You can just go ahead and use your regular laptop with the built-in speaker, microphone, and camera and be joining in on these conference calls now. So, but again, you know, one of the biggest problems is, and we're seeing a lot of this, is that sometimes when people do these video conference calls, you know, they might have two or three children that are on their Zoom call or their video conference call with their school, right, doing your hybrid mm-hmm. school instruction. And then at the same time, then you have another parent who is doing their conference call. And so maybe you might have three or four conference calls going in a residence at the same time. And so one of the problems we're seeing right now is a lot of these communication systems, a lot of the internet bandwidth going into a residence, even though the businesses are just fully saturated in terms of their bandwidth, what they mm-hmm. originally purchased for use, their homes and the businesses, because everybody's using, you know, this live stream now, which takes up a lot more bandwidth than just the ordinary, oh, I'm perusing the internet, looking at a website, I'm going out to Amazon, buying, you know, groceries or whatever they're doing. Live streaming and video conferencing takes up a lot more bandwidth now than mm-hmm. you know, traditionally people use the internet for.
When I was a kid, Zoom was a breakfast cereal. You poured it into boiling water and added some brown sugar, and that was breakfast.
Yeah, that's right. Now, that's really changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Eat your Zoom. I can't eat my Zoom.
That's right. By the way, you're dating yourself.
I know that. One of my daughters is a design major at UC Davis, and she was looking at old ads, old, you know, newspaper ads primarily, and I think one of them was for Zoom. You know, they're so odd looking, these old ads. You know, the stereotypes they play on that wouldn't fly today. So when we look at all the teleconferencing or whatever you call it, is everybody up to speed, not only how to work the technology, but do they actually have the technology?
You know, I'm going to say that what my observation has been just in the last 2 or 3 months is that if they weren't equipped technologically with having a laptop or a good desktop with a camera good set of speakers, microphone, et cetera. If they didn't, then they've probably gotten it by now because, you know, it's just impossible to do a video conference meeting if you don't have that equipment in place. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the alternative is in some cases, like, for example, with us, our system, we also give them the option to be able to dial into a meeting. Now, of course, if they don't have a computer, they might not be able to see, you know, the visuals that are being shared
right.
out to everybody on the screen, but at least they can still participate in the conference call.
You know, interestingly, we have four teenagers at home, and they're all engaged in this now. And, I was the kind of kid that went to class, and I sat in the back of the class. So there was nobody ever sitting behind me. Do you know what I mean? I could see everybody, the back of everybody else's heads, but they couldn't see the back of my head.
Right.
And I was very shy that way, you know, and
sure.
I've noticed with my kids, one of them especially doesn't want to have the camera on because he feels like only he is being looked at by everybody, you know?
Right.
And I'm not quite sure if they've worked that out, like, you know, sort of almost an invasion of his privacy in some way.
Right. Well, I'll definitely say that, you know, my observation is that when we're in a video conference call and you might have 10, 15, you know, we've had upwards of 200 people on a conference mm-hmm. call for a meeting. And, you know, it's not unusual for a few people to turn off their cameras. And I probably should say more than a few. In
uh-huh.
some cases, you know, there might be half the people that might turn it off. And, you know, the reality is, you know, that I guess it's kind of better. What some people do is because they're also using their smartphones sometime to dial in. You know, the issue that we also have is just plain the etiquette is different now. And so what I discover is sometimes during a long video conference call that some people, if they're using their smartphone, they might set it down on their desk,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it'll just be looking straight up. So what are you looking at? You're looking at the ceiling fan with a light spinning around. And so, you know, there's a little bit of etiquette that kind of goes with that. And sometimes I'm always tempted to put out a little notice about, okay, so this is what should be, you know, you should be observing this during the video conference call.
Well, and I'm sure a lot of home parents have had the same experience, you know, where mom and dad are talking about everything under the sun. And one of the kids go, my camera's on and people can hear you.
Well, and that's the other thing. So, you know, I'm sure that everybody can relate to this. It's been on a video conference call lately. Frequently, people will be they aren't cognizant that their microphone is on and it's picking up all the background noise.
Yep.
So, you know, you hear the dog barking,
yep.
The lawnmower running in the back.
Yep.
You'll hear the spouse telling the children, you know, what to eat or whatnot. And, you know, you have to always kindly remind people, oh, you might want to mute your microphone so that...
I was on a national show the other day, but it was by phone, and I was a guest. And we live about a block from the railroad tracks. And here came a 70-mile-an-hour diesel freight train just roaring. There was no hiding it, you know.
Right, of course, yeah. And there are also some cool, kind of cool features that some of the systems have. So, for example, they can put a background behind you and not even know. You know,
yeah.
Kind of like the green screen, you know, on television. You know, they can put anything in the back. It could be a nice scene in Hawaii, so make it look like you're in Hawaii, right, when you're really at home. But... it's kind of nice. There's some of these systems have some very cool features that go along with what the options that they have available. So,
we're talking with Phil DeLeon, the Chief Information Officer for the Diocese of Sacramento. Phil, what's a nightmare day for you? What?
Oh gosh, a nightmare day for me is when somebody calls at 7:30 in the morning and says the network is down.
Yeah.
Because then we have to spring into action.
And you haven't had your Zoom yet.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And, you know, I have to get right in there and dig in our heels and figure out, okay, who's down? Is this a global thing? Is it, you know, multiple users? Is it just a handful of users? Maybe it's just one. But, you know, you really have to dig in right away and try and figure out, you know, look at the broad picture first and see, you know, who's impacted. And, you know, fortunately, you know, we did some nice enhancements over the past year here prior to COVID-19. You know, our system's been pretty robust. We have a lot of redundancy built into it. But, you know, I think for me it was always if something's down, you know, it's still a business, especially the CFCS, the Catholic Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Service, that's still a business, and they have to operate, and they need to have those phones on at all times. They
right.
need to be able to have access to their computers because, you know, they need to be able to see, have access to the accounts and whatnot. And we're so dependent on that. And our customers, our clients, and our parishioners depend on us being online all the time. And I'm not just talking about from 8:30 to 4:30.
Right.
I mean, people are logged on. I watch the stats all the time, and I am always amazed how busy people are and how they constantly work. You know, it wouldn't be surprising to me if at 2:00 I take a look and see if anybody's on the network, and you know, there are a few people logged in, and it's just always amazed me. You know,
yeah.
It's a 24-hour business. And
yeah, I mean, I get emails from people that I might not be up, but they send it at like 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, right. Well, that might be by design, too.
Yeah, right. I'm working hard and you're not.
That's right. Or it could be, you know, I just don't want to have to face you, so I'll send it to you now so I don't get that response right away.
Yeah. And I think the other thing with all this technology is, I mean, you used to send somebody a letter and you wait a week for them to respond if you were asking them, you know, something. Now it's like if you don't get an answer in 15 minutes, you think they're mad at you.
Well, you know, and there's some difficulty with that, too, because in many ways, the other side of the coin is we are on information overload.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are lots of times I'll go back at my email at the end of the day and realize, because it's not like I'm sitting at my desk, you know, the entire 8 hours that I'm here. And then when I'm at home, it's not like I'm waiting to receive every single email and respond to it. But you're right. People do. You know, we are in that. We're in that state now where we expect we're always connected to our phones, to our email, and our text messages. And people expect you to respond right away. And
yeah.
The problem is, we really are in that age of information overload right now. And I don't know how we'll fix that, or if there is really a fix to that. But people, you know, do have to maintain that reality that. Hey, you know, we're not always connected to our, our phones 24/7.
Yeah, and you know, so often with at least with email and texting, you know, I need that report ASAP. You know, and it's like, oh, you don't have to be so mad. You know, and you know, well, I wasn't mad. I just use ASAP because that's what I use. You know, and you could see these conversations going south.
Oh, right.
Where the initial was not hostile.
Oh, right. Or you know, the classic one where somebody types in all caps, right?
Oh, yeah.
The person thinks that, why are you yelling at me? What do you mean by yelling? Well, they don't realize, oh, the etiquette, you know. All caps means that you're trying to emphasize it.
Yeah.
So, the funny parts, you know, again, coming back to the etiquette of the technology, right, and the use thereof, it's just amazing.
So, Phil, scams, you more than once, you've warned us and, you know, warned the general public about scams.
Oh, yeah. Well, we just can't ever not get the word out enough. You know, and before, to augment that, I'll start off by saying October is always Cybersecurity Month.
Really?
And that has been true now. This, I believe, is actually the 10th year of Cybersecurity Month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people should be taking a look at certain sites just as a reminder, a kind reminder to, you know, what is it they can do, because technology changes constantly. And if they want to find out what some of the things they want to do in terms of keeping their network security or keeping their children safe and whatnot, there are a couple of good websites that they can take a look at. And one of them is staysafeonline.org. And the other one is stopthinkconnect.org. But those are two very good websites to especially take a look at during the month of October, which, again, is Cybersecurity Month.
StaySafeOnline.org. And what was the second one?
Yeah, StaySafeOnline.org and StopThinkConnect.org.
StopThinkConnect.org.
And while we're on that, you know, one of the things also I would say is, in terms of security, is everyone needs a password, you know, for every single thing they access. And one of the things that I am starting to see is that how many different passwords do people have? And,
mm-hmm.
and maybe in some cases, some people use the same password for everything, which
yeah.
probably isn't a good idea either. But, you know, it's always good that there's always some complexity to the password and that they try and maybe the easiest way to do it is not use a unique password that's all scrambled and made up of some nonsense characters. But maybe think up of a phrase,
mm-hmm.
like if you're in the Catholic Church, you just might use something like the Holy Sepulchre.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's a nice complex word. You can change some of the letters to numbers, like the word holy. You can change the O to a zero, the E to the number three. And, you know, they can make it complex by you thinking of a phrase that they might be able
mm-hmm.
to relate to.
Oh, very
you know,
interesting.
That's what I would suggest. Yeah, that's a tough one. I was just looking earlier today because, oddly enough, one of the things that they're talking about for Cybersecurity Month this month is password security, password complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at every year. It's interesting to see what are the top 10 common passwords people use. And it doesn't generally change very much from year to year. But this year, the top 10 are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, QWERTY, password, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I love you.
Wow.
1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, and 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And then some other words that are pretty common, the words nothing, secret, password 1, and admin. And of those last four I just gave, I see those all the time. So, you know, so if anybody out there is listening to this and I just called out something and that said, oh, I use that, maybe you might consider changing that.
Very interesting. Yeah. So are there any scams that I can get in on that could make me rich? I promise to tithe.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. You know, so, you know, so one that we are still seeing very commonly, and last week, I want to say it was, we received word that once again, you know, there's some scammer going through, an imposter, and he's making up this email address that looks like someone who we would know, you know, someone, an important figure. So in our case for the diocese, someone is impersonating the bishop and some of the pastors of the parishes. And what they're doing is they're making up email addresses that look similar either to their name or to their actual email address. So in particular case, one of the parishioners said that his email he received, he sent an email saying, I just want to ask whether or not this is actually an email from the bishop, because he just asked, hey, could you get in contact with me as soon as possible? Can you respond to this email? And then when I looked at the email address, it was jaimesoto@gmail.org. So we just had to let that person know, well, first of all, the bishop probably wouldn't send an email out like that.
Right.
And if it's a Gmail address, it's most certainly not from the bishop. So, you know, we get that someone could say in the name that it's, I'm Bishop Soto or I'm Jaime Soto, but they really need to just be somewhat suspect of any email, you know, like that, and trust everyone, or and not trust every single email. Be suspicious.
So is this just a prankster, or if you respond, they're going to get something out of it somehow?
So that's the thing, is usually what they're trying to do is get a response from you to come back and say, oh, what can I do for you, Bishop?
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the next thing they'll do is they'll send out a request. Well, you know, one of the things I could do is maybe they'll ask for something like gift cards. Can you go out and buy some gift cards and then send just the code on the back?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because we need to use this for, say, for example, a cancer patient or something like that.
Sure.
And so that's kind of the scam. And, you know, everybody wants to help, right? I mean, that's especially for such an organization as the church or the Catholic diocese. And so many actually buy into this scam. And then later on think, okay, not only did he ask for three, but then later on he asked if I could buy 10 more. And that's when they become suspicious.
I think
by then it's too late.
A lot of us have gotten emails sometimes from somebody we know.
Right.
I'm in England. I lost my passport.
Yeah.
I'm in a little bit of trouble. I can't get out of the country, but they'll let me re-up it if I've got $1,500, but I'm out of, I don't have any, you know, can you help me?
Yes, exactly.
How do they know I'm a friend with this person?
You know, so that's always the interesting thing, is trying to figure that out. And, you know, so for example, let's take the case of the parish, right, where they use the pastor's name and say, you know, this is Father John, and I was just hoping that you could help out, but once again.
Right.
And then when you look at that, the person's name, they've probably gone to look at the bulletin of that parish online. And, you know, every single person who does something,
is listed.
Pancake breakfast, you know, the Knights of Columbus,
right,
the secretaries, and what, they're all listed on the bulletin. Yep. And what do they list? They list their mobile phone number.
Yep.
So or their email address. So then the scammer has easily been able to put together, has done his homework, his or her homework, and can now send an email or a text message to that individual on their mobile phone or their email address and tie it back to the pastor of that parish. Or in the case of the diocese, they could go to the website, right, of any business organization, find out who the CEO is or whatever, you know, and impersonate that person. And that's really what's happening, is, you know, they're putting a little bit of time, they're spending a little, they're doing their homework, and then they're pulling these email addresses or their phone numbers, their mostly mobile phone numbers from the internet, and then using that to contact these folks.
So, Phil, my final question. You must feel a little like an umpire or a referee. You're only going to hear from us when we have a problem.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we're IT people. And, you know, that's the one thing we're always here to fix. That. That's the heart of the IT people, I would always say, is they always want to fix something, right? That's just a classic. And, you know, I think that it's we're just always here to take care of folks, and we're always that's what we thrive off of.
Well, I can tell you do a great job of taking care of us.
Thank you for that, Bob.
I know people appreciate around the building feel the same way. We're lucky to have you, and greatly appreciate all you do. And I'm just thrilled you took time to be with us today, and you didn't get interrupted to go fix a problem.
There you go. I did not. That's right. Right. Well, thank you very much, Bob. You know, appreciate you having me on, and anytime I can help out, just let me know.
Oh, we have your number.
All right.
Thanks, Phil. God bless.
All right, God bless.
Yeah, God bless you, too. That's Phil DeLeon, who is the Chief Information Officer here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. Back with more in the Bishop's Hour right after this. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town, and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento, who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Laura Lynn. Appreciate that very much. The Life Center always has, it's the Sacramento Life Center, does such great work, and they always have their great fundraiser in usually the first Saturday of November. Well, that is going to happen again this Saturday. Saturday, November is the 7th, a couple weeks away, but it will be virtual. It won't be in person. It's always a big gala. It's one of their, well, it is their chief fundraiser, and it helps so many of the things that they are, the services they are able to offer at the Sacramento Life Center. But it will be virtual. Go to SacLifeGala.com. They have some wonderful raffle items. They're having an auction, a virtual benefit and auction. You can get tickets for the raffle. It's all of it. The auction and raffle will be online. You can register, view items, and bid at SacLifeGala.com. The bidding begins November 1st, and then will end on November 7th at 10 p.m. You can even bid on a private dinner party. So sponsorships are available as well. They can always use sponsorships. This is sponsored by the Sacramento Life Center and Mosley Collins Law. Present the 2020 virtual gala and auction where hope grows. And you participate, and you will just help them with all the great services they provide to the community of Sacramento. Again, SacLifeGala.com and 916-451-4357. Now, there are 12 propositions on the California ballot, and the bishops of throughout the state of California, through the California Catholic Conference, have taken a position on two of them. But Prop 14, which has to do with stem cell research and specifically funding of stem cell research in the state of California and specifically embryonic stem cell research, and we've talked a little bit about that. They urge a no vote. You can go to cacatholic.org. And read about an analysis of a number of the propositions, even those that the bishops have decided not to take a position on. They're not urging a yes or a no vote. But and they also have taken a position on Prop 20, also a no vote on Prop 20, which we haven't talked about. California is a leader in correctional justice reform. The church has been a strong voice in that effort. Recent reforms have produced many policies aimed at preparing incarcerated people to return safely and productively to the community while simultaneously expanding services to help crime victims heal and recover. Proposition 20 on the November ballot will reverse that progress. This is a statement from the California Catholic Conference, threatening to return California's correctional system to the overcrowded, expensive, and revolving door system of the past. For this reason, the California Catholic Conference is opposing Prop 20. Problems in the old system were so severe that a federal judge took over control of inmate medical service at one point. California voters and lawmakers, however, began gradually reforming the system by enacting more than a dozen bills or ballot initiatives, such as Prop 47 in 2014, Prop 57 in 2016, that have prioritized local public safety programs over long prison sentences. Gradually, the series of changes have shaped a more restorative, rehabilitative system, introduced new aid for victims and their families, helped the state comply with the federal lawsuit on prison conditions, and reduced the prison population by more than 40,000 people while still keeping crime rates at historical lows. Proposition 20 would repeal much of this progress and emphasize a more punitive rather than restorative justice system in California. California Catholic Conference, which again represents all the bishops of the state of California, the conference is also opposing Prop 14, which would provide $5.5 billion in taxpayer funding for a regenerative medicine institute that includes embryonic stem cell research. For a complete analysis of Prop 20, Prop 14, and the other 12 measures altogether on the ballot, they're listed as Prop 14 through Prop 25. You can visit the election resources page of the California Catholic Conference and take a look at all, a comprehensive look at all 12 propositions on the November ballot. And the good thing about it is they explain them in light of church teaching, and even those that they don't take a position on, there are a number, you know, they're really all over the map what they propose, and the bishops have studied them, and they regularly will take a position on several, and usually don't take a position on a number, and of course they do not take a position on candidates for office of any kind, whether it's the presidency or the mayor or city council or school board or county supervisor or anything else like that. But those are go to cacatholic.org, and you can also get the, and they have good stuff there about faithful citizenship, etc. This is a message from Bishop Soto. We are in the middle of Respect Life Month. This is from the bishop. St. Paul explained to us how Jesus revealed his power through humility. He humbly assumed our human nature and then purified our human nature by his obedience to the Father. Quote, he humbled himself, becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. End of quote. This is a wonderful paradox. By his humble human obedience, Jesus revealed the glory of his divinity. Because of this, Jesus' humble obedience, God greatly exalted him. The Lord's humiliating obedience on the cross manifested his glory as the beloved Son of God the Father. Jesus' example not only showed us the way, by following Jesus in his obedience to the Father, we become, even now, the glorious sons and daughters of God. The words of St. Paul help us understand the beauty of today's parable about the two sons. The first son refused his father's command to go into the vineyard, then later repented and went. Second son said yes to the father's command, but then never went. Jesus' question to the disciples, which of the two did his father's will, seems obvious. But there is a deeper question. Who behaved as a true child of the father? The relationship of the two sons with their father was more than just blood. The first son, by going to cultivate the vineyard, showed that he had the heart of his father. Others could easily see he was the father's son because he was cultivating the father's vineyard. Coming this month of October is celebrated every year by the Catholic Church in the United States as Respect Life Month. During this month, we renew our understanding and commitment to the gospel of Jesus as the gospel of life, the saving message that gives life and hope to the human person. More than a wonderful compendium of moral teachings, the gospel of life is rooted in our relationship to the Father Jesus, the obedient Son of the Father, invites us to listen to the Father's voice and go with him into the vineyard to cultivate among our family and neighbors the teachings about the dignity of life. It's such a wonderful image going into the vineyard to do the Lord's work. Many of the teachings of the gospel of life do not find much acceptance in American society today. We can be tempted to see ourselves in opposition to the ideology and habits of the throwaway society in which we live. Today's gospel reminds that this is not our primary motivation. We preach the gospel of life and should practice what we preach because this is what our Father calls us to do. He sends us into the vineyard with the hopeful and joyful message of his Son, Jesus. Because we are the Father's children, we recognize that the vineyard is his. The throwaway nature of abortion does not have a place in his vineyard. The placement of abortion centers in the neighborhoods of poor, immigrant, and African-American communities perpetuates a historical pattern of exclusion that threatens the vitality of the Father's vineyard. The sin of racism in this light simply prolongs the work that abortion began. Black lives, immigrant lives, poor lives, unborn lives matter to the Father's vineyard. For this reason, the Father commands us to go into the vineyard. Again, such a wonderful image. These are the words of Bishop Soto welcoming us all to October, Respect Life Month. To truly cultivate the gospel of life, we must cultivate the dignity of each human person, beginning with the women and men who will conceive a child. Our cultivation of the vineyard of life begins with seeing one another as part of the Father's vineyard of life. We must sow the seeds of dignity and respect for one another so that all life might be cherished and nurtured as part of the Father's bounty. The sin of abortion commands our attention, but to focus on the sinful act of abortion alone misses the opportunity to change the hearts and minds of women and men who find themselves compelled or being coerced to cross the threshold of an abortion center. It is narrow-minded to think that the lack of health care access, mass incarceration, and underperforming schools are not aligned with the throwaway culture of abortion. Creating communities of hope opens life-giving alternatives away from the desperation of despair of abortion. So that all human life might grow to the fullness of God's glory in the Father's vineyard, we must look for the ways to accompany one another and cultivate a new way of being neighbors for one another, especially for the unborn and vulnerable. Young people especially need our counsel and encouragement in making good decisions about how they respect themselves and reference their bodies as temples of the Holy Spirit. Improving social dialogue and support our neighbors, especially those who are poor, can open the door for hearing the good sense and the good news about the gospel of life. But we must listen first. Lend an ear to the suffering, uncertainty, and vulnerability that afflict many of our neighbors. Jesus often listened first to those who came to him. Only then could he heal them and offer them new life. Our parish should be a haven for families where families are celebrated and cherished. Let us be ready to accompany and encourage expectant mothers in the journey with the child they carry. They should not carry them alone. There have been many marches when diverse peoples come together for a just cause. Too many women walk alone with the uncertainty and worry of an unexpected pregnancy. They should know that we will walk with them in hope and help. Together we can help them join a procession of life and dignity that will bear fruit in the Father's vineyard. Our witness to the gift of life is a common protest with a joyful noise against the practice of excluding innocent little ones from the Father's vineyard through abortion. Our care for mothers and their children must also protest the throwaway politics that perpetuate unlimited access to abortion while denying access to the common goods of our society. Consider participating in the daily prayer vigils in front of abortion centers organized by 40 Days for Life during the month of October. Little is decent or dignified about the careless disregard for unborn children. The practice of abortion is an immoral toxin that poisons the father's vineyard. We must cultivate a new politic that understands the good science and good sense of acknowledging the rights and dignity of the unborn child. We must find a new way of cultivating and expanding the father's vineyard so that all may have life and share it more abundantly. Let us commend this work to the intercession of our Blessed Mother Mary. During this month of October, Respect Life Month, commit to the daily recitation of the Rosary. If we go to the Father's vineyard to cultivate, this gospel of life, then others will recognize us as the daughters and sons of the Father. That is so profound. If we go to the Father's vineyard to cultivate this gospel of life, then others will recognize us as the daughters and sons of the Father. Those are the words of Bishop Soto talking to all of us about preparing in this month, Respect Life Month, the month of October. Gabe, powerful words from our bishop.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually came in to, for those who didn't see because we're on podcast, I walked in right as Bob was about to start reading that. And I'd come in to talk to you about something totally different. But October is a good transition. I was saying this isn't necessarily a Catholic topic, but it's interesting to see that now we're starting to have the distraction of sports, and baseball is going into the World Series. We've had hockey, we've had football going on.
NBA.
It's NBA. It's becoming one of those things where you and I sort of end up always talking about the 800-pound elephant in the room, which is COVID. And it's funny how it's slowly but surely our things are starting to happen, and it's nice because I think now that we have Deacon Kevin Staskow on later this week, and I know he's going to be talking about some events that are coming up and things like that, and it's one of those things where you start to be able to talk about events again and things again.
Yep.
and it's funny, like in the beginning of this or in the middle of this whole thing, you see these memes online of people saying, hey, do you remember how great it was to do things, you know, and things like that. And it was sort of these jokes, but it's funny. It's not a joke. I mean, it really is one of those things you start to miss things you didn't realize that you missed. And as just a producer, it's nice to be able to go, oh, hey, I'm going to give this person a call because they have an event coming up soon.
Right.
Even if it is virtual. I mean, there's things that we are doing virtually and some things now not.
I'm just blown away by in this diocese how the clock never stopped.
Yeah,
you look at our Catholic schools. March the 13th, which was a Friday the 13th, the mm-hmm. schools closed.
Yeah,
people went home.
Right.
They didn't close. They just went home. It's a Friday afternoon. They went home from in-person instruction. On Monday, the 16th of March, our Catholic schools were all back in business.
Yeah.
Virtually, not in person.
Right.
Virtually. Many of them are now back in person in this fall. They worked very hard to get there and to get waivers in those counties where they needed waivers, et cetera. But the plan was to always go back in person. When this all, we hear this over and over from people, well, we thought it was going to be a week or two, or we thought maybe it'd be a month, and it wasn't.
I see things where like we're now in day 200 to 15 days to slow the spread.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that sort of thing.
And you look at Catholic Charities and social concerns. You look at the Sacramento Food Bank. They've never been so busy.
Right.
Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, Sacramento Life Center. They've never been so busy. Loaves and Fishes, they've never been so busy. And you look at all these events in the Family and Faith Formation, Youth and Young Adult, our Newman Centers at Sacramento State, UC Davis and Chico State, all of them planning events, many of them virtual, but their services, which is so much of what our church is about, is reaching out. Those services haven't stopped.
Right.
St. Vincent de Paul, the Knights of Columbus, Bishop Gagos Maternity Home.
When we respect
those
life
services, not only are they ongoing, they're number of people they're seeing has increased dramatically.
Makes you feel good to be a human, to know that when things are down like this, people help out more.
Yeah,
it's great. I mean, Respect Life Month is, I mean, we talked to Jacqueline Aguilar, and it's like, you know, yeah, things, there's hurdles to things, but things don't stop.
And 40 Days for Life is,
has to stop.
Which has been one of the classic, they've always done social distancing anyway.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. Stand away. Okay. Yeah. There you go. It's interesting to me because you see things slowly open, but it's like some things you realize have never changed. Like I was talking about earlier with the sports and stuff coming back, and it's a sort of a warm fuzzy feeling. Like I haven't really watched football on a Sunday other than highlights in years because I had my son and Sundays was my only day off. And, you know, we had other things to do on Sundays, you know, so sit around and watch football.
It's interesting how having a child will change your priorities.
Yes, it does. It definitely
does.
Better. Yeah. So, I actually sat down with him yesterday in the afternoon and we watched maybe a quarter or two of football and it was just nice to just sit and do that. And it's weird. It's like comfort food for the brain. But the nice thing about this whole thing is that even though there has been, you know, we can't go to church, can't do virtual, do this, that, the church has found a way too. And it just goes to show that, you know, it's if something means something and something is important, it will happen.
Yeah. And you know, Jesus has been with us through the plague and way back.
Right.
You know,
I mean, this one isn't even called the plague. There's one that's called the plague.
The plague. Yeah. That's, you know, and a church was very active then in helping people.
Yeah.
The so-called Spanish flu about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
The current whatever you want to call it, the plague, coronavirus,
yeah,
COVID-19.
If one person dies from it, it's already bad enough.
That's right. And Jesus is with us the whole time. He hasn't changed. He hasn't left. You know, and our personal lives, he's always with us. And people talk about, you know, the election, and you go, there's a million. It depends on where you live in this vast diocese of Sacramento. But you've got, you know, obviously, you've got the national stuff, but you also have a everybody has a House of Representatives, a congressional candidate on the ballot.
Yep,
everybody.
Everybody.
In California, we don't have any U.S. senators, but everybody has a congressional election every 2 years. Many people will have a city council race, a board of supervisors race, a school board race.
I mean, I've seen more names on signs that I didn't know than
you
always do. It's like, who's this person? Who's this person?
Yeah.
And then some of them, like, you do know the name and you're like, wait, is that why I know that person's name?
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. It's interesting because it's people will say that, oh, I don't vote. It doesn't matter. Electoral college. It's like, okay, well that might pick the president, but there's a lot of things that you can vote on that matter. I mean, it does matter to vote. I mean, it's your civic duty.
I remember seeing a headline in one of the papers the other day, and I'll just make up the candidate's name, Smith, and it said, virtual party for Smith. And
I said, virtual party?
I've never heard of the virtual party. And then I realized it was like a coffee or something.
To
fundraise for that candidate.
Gotcha.
You know, but virtual party. You know.
You never know nowadays.
You never know. Yeah, well,
you see some of those candidates, and you're like, what party is that?
Yeah.
You're used to seeing sort of the Green Party and the, you know, independents and all that, but then you'll see some and you're like, I didn't even know that was a party. And it's kind of like one of those things where you're like, you wish you would remember it so you can go home and study it. Not because you may or may not want to vote for it, just like, what is your platform? I've never heard of you before.
No. And if you look at the ballot, you'll see candidates that you've never heard of frequently for a lot of parties that, you know, we have the two major parties, but you'll see so-called minor parties. Some are a lot more well-known than other
parties. Every so often you get one that pops up. I think the Green Party was what, Nader? People knew his name?
Years ago, I think.
Yeah, yeah. People knew his name, and like I think Gary Johnson last time.
Every now and then, sometimes they'll get 8, 10, 12% of the Ross Perot.
Ross Perot.
I think Ross Perot was an independent, though. I don't.
But still, he was, I think, probably the biggest third party candidate we've had, at least in modern times.
Easily.
Yeah.
But Jesus is not on the ballot, but.
But he's sort of all over it, too.
He's all over it. And he's already been elected.
Yeah.
And it's, I was going to say it's a lifetime term, but it's more than that.
Right.
So We don't have
actually. It's been a longer term now than it was in his lifetime. So he's
all these and some people have been lucky that they can establish some sort of rhythm. Many of us have gotten into this is the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. It always seemed like it had an end date. Leave the politics out of it. I think everybody thought by summer we were going to be.
Talk about COVID.
Yeah, COVID. That
most scientists would say that. Yeah, that's sort of the word we got was the heat would kill it off and all that stuff.
Exactly. And everybody's going to be back in school in the fall and everything's going to be back to normal. And we haven't come close to that. And in fact, we're in the midst of a resurge, apparently, if you look at all the data.
Right.
And fortunately, they have managed to cut down the death rate, I think, probably because you see these doctors interviewed in March and they go, we're shooting in the dark. We've never seen this. We don't know what works, what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then, people, they share information and they say, well, we tried this and this is working pretty good. And
they've
got all these different therapeutics. And
you always hear cocktail thrown in there for different
bunch of things.
Yeah, different things that don't have cures.
You first heard that term, I think, with AIDS.
Yeah, it was HIV AIDS cocktail. It was like this drug did this, this drug did this, this one helps with muscle wasting, this one. It's like you take all of them and then, they supposedly all work the one way. And it seems as if they're kind of coming up with a cocktail that at least helps people with the more mild cases that almost like mimic a flu and what have you. And they also learned that like a lot of the times the respirators don't work and not to go to the respirator. I mean, so unfortunately, at the beginning of this thing, so many people that, like you said, they didn't know what they were doing as far as they'd never seen it before. So they're kind of throwing everything they could at it. And yeah, unfortunately, that was the reality that we lived in.
But the death rate is still quite high, but it's about,
well, like
half,
I said, one is high.
Half, one is high. That's right. And it's about half of what it was.
Yeah.
But it's still way too high, and I think what we're seeing now is we're just sort of kind of accepting that this is the way it's going to be for a while.
Yeah,
there's not an end date, like,
right,
and so
I've heard a lot of people say that have studied the Spanish flu, like 18 months seems to be one of the things that pandemics burn out, but who knows.
And it did have a real resurgence in the fall.
Yes. Yes, it did. And they said it was about 18 months. It, almost like, I think that it was a podcast I was listening to with the epidemiologist, and he was saying that the way that a lot of these things work, and again, I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm just a radio producer, but it was something like the resurgence in the fall that they saw that they expected to come from the first year came from the second year, and by then the herd immunity and what have it had you kind of burned it out at 18 months. Now, I don't know if that's true. I don't know. That's what epidemiologists said, but we've all been hearing 10,000 different things about it. So who knows? I mean, it's something to be hopeful for, but at the same time, it's,
The thing you can look at various websites and they list every state or every county or every country.
Yeah.
And nobody is immune. I mean, it's hit everywhere.
I was going to say, back to what we were talking about before with the schools, though. I remember my daughter's preschool was having, they were talking about, okay, I know one of the teachers, so she has said, hey, I think Friday, the 13th, we're not coming back. Mm-hmm. And this was like the week before. She's like, we're going to do what we can to get ready to, because it's technically, it's a daycare, because it's a preschool. So they were like, we're going to do what we can to get everything back. But like, she was telling me the stuff they were doing, and it was just this huge effort. So thinking about the large effort it takes for one preschool, the Herculean effort that Lincoln and his staff had to do, and all the staff at all the schools in Diocese of Sacramento, to turn around on Monday and be ready to go virtually. One school.
Technologically.
Yeah.
Just like.
I know.
You, and all your faculty and all your principals and all of everybody, this is what we're doing on Monday morning.
Yeah.
Of course, the Mercy Sisters came up the river from San Francisco on a Friday in 1857, probably Friday the 13th of March, who knows.
Probably, yeah.
On a Friday. By Monday, they had a school open. And not much after that, they had hospitals open.
Wow.
So this Friday to Monday thing is a Catholic tradition in the Diocese of Sacramento.
I mean, those have got to be some really tough ladies to come up through. I mean,
can you imagine 1857, California only been a state for 7 years. The gold rush was, you know, probably not quite over, but it, you know, the 1849 was the big rush.
Right. And there was a lot of,
a lot of flooding.
Yeah. Well, I think about, like, if you read Lewis and Clark's accounts, they took a lot of, like, you know, we stayed here for a few weeks because we were tired from our journey, and we did this for a couple days, and then we ate and got provisions.
Yeah.
They came up and didn't take a break at all, worked all the way through the weekend and got their school done.
I know.
Ah, it's amazing. So, I mean, was there, I'm assuming it wasn't a brick and mortar place, but they had all the kids attending school on Monday. I doubt they put a barn up by Monday.
We talked to Sister Catherine Doyle about it last week.
Yeah.
Remark, and she said how many, I forgot, she said how many students they had that first day, and it was actually a pretty good number.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming they probably were outside sitting on a stump and having the kids learn, but still, that's amazing. I mean, just the idea of the dedication to that vocation to be a teacher. And
I think she said the first school was downtown where the ice rink is.
Oh, yeah, in Sacramento? Yeah, right down there off, what is that? I think it's J, isn't it?
Right in the heart of downtown.
It's right where the old mall used to be, like right down the bottom of the steps of the old mall.
It's quite near the Golden One, I think.
Everything is near that behemoth at this point. But yeah, it's right down there by Golden One. I think it's actually in that little courtyard behind the Golden One. So it's pretty amazing. But when is college? And it was college football. You're a college football aficionado. It is college football.
It's all over the map.
Is it?
Because some schools, the Southeastern Conference, ACC and Latin Coast Conference. Some of them, Big 12, they've been playing all along in normal, but they've had a lot of cancellations.
Gotcha.
Or postponements. Postponing means you're going to try to play it. Canceled means it's gone. The Big 10 will start this weekend, and the Pac-12, which is Cal, Stanford, Oregon State, those schools, Washington, they will start on the November 7th.
It's like following minor league baseball at this point.
Yeah, they're playing abbreviated schedules. And then locally, Sacramento State, which is in the Big Sky Conference and actually won the championship last fall.
That's right, Hornets.
They were going to play a six-game schedule beginning in February. And Sacramento State just announced, and you would appreciate this or have a say about it, that they were not going to play. There's 13 schools in this conference, and the other 12 are still planning to play, but Sac State just announced it's too much football too close together because the season starting in the end of February
will
run into middle of May.
Right.
And then they got to turn around and play presumably a regular season next fall. And you know how fall camp starts. It starts in July or early August.
I can't imagine.
They didn't say COVID. They said player safety.
Interesting.
They said it's real games. It's just too much.
Interesting.
In a short period of time that we think it's too – because let's say they play the six games and then they get in the playoffs and they end up playing nine games or something like that. And then they, you know, they'd have fall practice starts in August 1st or so, and the end of August start an 11-12 game schedule with playoffs, maybe 15. So you're talking about maybe 24 or 5 games in about a 6-month period.
Ah, come on, they're 19, they'll be fine.
They came out and said we just don't think it's safe.
Back when I played football, I would have killed for year-round football.
That's true. Because of that, though, I think there may be other schools will kind of think, gee, they kind of took the high ground here.
So they just forfeit all their games? So if Montana State was going to play them?
They just aren't going to participate. They didn't have the schedule.
Schedule
had not been.
Gotcha.
They were tentatively drawing up the schedule because it didn't start till February 27.
So just don't include them.
So they just don't include them.
I can't imagine being a senior there trying to, season.
Everybody will be granted another year of eligibility.
Oh.
So they can. So
now I can really imagine being a senior because you could just take pottery for the next 12 units and play football.
Yeah,
that'd be great. When I played at Sierra College, there was a couple guys who didn't understand you had to have 12 units, and a couple guys got kicked off the team for having 3 units, and football was 3 units.
Or you start out with 12, and then you drop a class or something, and
you got to pick it up before they do the check midseason. Yeah. We actually had guys walk into the training room from the school and ask people to leave. It was pretty rough.
That's going to do it to us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.